Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast, episode 135. My name is David Brook and I'm here with Nathan Simmons. I don't know why we're here though. Nathan, can you explain it to me?
Yeah, man. This is the comic book podcast where we talk about the biggest news of the week. We have guests on as well. We talk about our favorite comics of the week. And usually we talk about it for like an hour and a half before we start recording. So, like you guys are literally hearing us re-hanging out. It's kind of cool.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You know, one of these days we should just don't even prep. Don't talk at all. Just hit record and see what happens.
Okay, yeah.
It'd probably be really sloppy. I'd somehow talk about my dinner that night.
That's fine. Can we talk about, I'm currently drinking an old fashioned out of my McDonald's Batman Forever glass.
Oh my
gosh.
I'm
a very fancy boy.
I love that. That's actually in the sequel of Sideways. He's drinking a Dom Perignon out of one of those. That's a super deep cut if you haven't seen Sideways.
Sideways rules.
I'm drinking Crystal Light out of a seltzer bottle.
You sure are, and I'm worried about you.
It's 2 liters. I usually down this in about 2 hours. I don't know if that's enough Crystal Light to turn me into the Hulk, but we'll see.
The Red Hulk, maybe.
The Red Hulk, yeah. This week, we have Ryan Paradon to talk about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, or more specifically, Mighty Morphin number 10. It came out this week, and really big reveal in regards to a backstory to a key villain. We get into spoilers, so make sure you read that issue before you listen to it. But we dig really deeply into his process as far as, you know, writing his flashbacks, flash forwards, his approach, his childhood with the characters. This isn't the first time he's been on the show, but we get into even maybe like what's the future hold for the Power Rangers. He's been writing the book for 4 or 5 years now, so he's fully entrenched, much like we are when it comes to the weekly comic news. This week, probably the biggest news of the week. No, it definitely is.
Yeah, for sure.
Substack. If you don't know what it is, you found out on Monday because James Tynion, Jonathan Hickman, Saladin Ahmed, those three creators and a few others, they all revealed that they are moving to Substack with their creative creator-owned books. And the splashier news that launched it all was the fact that James Tynion said he was given a Batman contract and he said no thank you to Batman, which is like 99% of the world's dream to do something with Batman, I'm sure. So that was the bold, striking, whoa, this dude is not going to write Batman to move to this weird thing called Substack. Substack, really quick recap, is predominantly used for like newsletters. So people can email you directly. And in the case of these comics creators, they will charge you anywhere from $7 to $8 a month or $70 to $80 a year. Or if you want to be a founder, $250 is the magic number for all of them. They promise. What's interesting is they don't have a total like handle on what the deal is, but they will be basically emailing you their creator-owned titles twice a month maybe or more or less depending on what their approach is. This is potentially a game changer because these big time creators who are typically working on stuff like X-Men and Batman aren't going to be necessarily working on those or working on them less.
It's a way of getting, you know, their creator owned content direct to the consumer, but it, you know, it's been you know, it's given way to a lot of discourse, you know, trying to figure out if this is a good or a bad thing. And I think it's so early that it's, you know, it's very kind of hard to tell. I mean, like, you know, the Substack of it all is confusing, right? Like we were talking before we started recording that like, this was just not something that was like on either of our radars.
No, not at all.
In terms of how it could be used for comics. Like I knew of it as a newsletter platform. But it's, you know, I feel like we're in this like kind of weird space that everyone was in early 2020 where everyone was just kind of like Zoom. You mean that video app, you know?
Sure.
You know, the on the opposite side of that, Substack has infamously been a platform for some pretty terrible people, you know, noted transphobes with successful newsletters. And it's kind of the platform's kind of operated under a lukewarm, not our place to say policy, you know, when it comes to policing that kind of content. But also, you know, we've talked about this on the show, but comics creators are, by and large, vastly underpaid. Many of them are freelancers. Even when they're working for on major books for the big two. And in that sense, you know, I can see why a creator would jump at the chance for a big paycheck and a platform they can curate directly to their audience. And I wish this wasn't a case where said paycheck had to come from a place that has ambiguous moral stances.
Right.
You know, it's also been nice to see that a lot of these creators are already have plans to donate the grants they're receiving from Substack to charities and to kind of like make that platform make a difference, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how this develops for sure, especially with these like larger names.
Yeah. Chip Zdarsky, he launched his on Thursday. There's actually an interview with him on the website if you want to read that. He gets into mm-hmm. some of the details about what he's going to offer and his approach. But he revealed in his first newsletter post that all of the subscription money will be going to Rainbow Railroad, which is a nonprofit that works with LGBTQI plus people who face persecution globally. So he's literally taking, I mean, it's $250 a person if you go with the founder's level, and he's giving it away. And that's potentially negating what you were talking about with transphobes.
I mean, it doesn't morally. It doesn't make it so that they don't have a platform, but it does mean that these people who have a significant following are hopefully what I would like to see is these creators using this opportunity to use the platform for good and to maybe even, you know, create some change, which would be great. I mean, I know Molly Knox Ostertag is also donating a significant amount to charities as well. So that's been, it's been really encouraging in the midst of, you know, a lot of questions.
You know, what's fascinating is they're able to give it away because they were given, everyone was given a lucrative amount of money up front just to do this, just to bring their creator-owned stuff to the platform. So they don't, it's almost like they don't even need, that's not necessarily true, but they don't even need the subscription money because they've been given so much up front from Substack itself.
Well, and that's what's going to be interesting is to see how these creators dole that out. They're kind of, this is kind of like a, you know, here's your advance, you figure out where this goes. So people, you know, so people will be paying their writer, the writers and artists that'll be working with them and, you know, paying it forward as well and finding different ways, different avenues of releasing this content. And that's also still a big question mark is, you know, some of these creators are not 100% sure how the print version of this will happen. You know, like how will we see these in stores, and is that an option when you're charging for a subscription fee? It's kind of a similar thing to how people who kickstart their work or have a Patreon, how they get that out in the world as well. I think we're going to see a real evolution of the platform in ways that we can't even predict right now.
Right. And I don't even think the creators can predict even the ones that are getting these big deals like James Tynan, because even he said in his newsletter, I think the second or first one, he was saying, we're still figuring this out. We don't necessarily know how we're going to deliver these books. He, in that same newsletter, he said, you know, expect a 10 issue comic biweekly that will be read in your email, and there will be a PDF link in the email. But is there, he fully admits, is there a better way to do this? Probably. And we'll, and if there is, we'll move to that approach.
And look, as someone who loves me some web comics, I'm used to printing stuff out and stapling it together. as someone who used to read a lot of fan fiction, I've also done that as well. So, I mean, I don't know. There's something kind of neat about, you know, one of the most prolific creators in comics, is some of the most prolific creators in comics starting zines, essentially.
Yeah, basically. What's crazy is, what's to stop people from just forwarding their email to, like BCCing, like, 500 friends?
Oh, yeah, sure.
There might, interesting. Substack would have to do something to protect that from happening, although you're never going to stop piracy in comics.
No, yeah, and that has been an interesting argument, as people have been like, oh, well, what's going to stop them from sharing it? And I was like, that's already a problem.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not, this isn't going to be, this is something we're already trying to solve.
So basically, if you like these creators enough, you'll subscribe at this point, because at this stage, we don't know enough about what they're necessarily delivering. I know Jonathan Hickman he's co-working with Teeny Howard, Ram V, and Al Ewing to create a universe, sci-fi universe with religion and magic and all these other elements, politics. Whereas Chip Zdarsky's promised to bring back some older titles that he hasn't written in a while. So you'll only be able to get it there.
While continuing Daredevil, correct?
Yeah, he basically said in the interview on amputeecomics.com, like, there's a shelf life to anyone writing at the big two, either because you've written all the characters and all the stories you want, sure. or because you don't get the gig or whatever.
Right.
So he definitely isn't going to continue his Marvel work, and I think he still has DC work planned too. But probably you're not going to see him doing like Image Comics like he was in the last couple of years. I mean, he just announced another graphic novel with Comixology a few weeks ago.
Sure.
And then on top of all this, you've got Scott Snyder, who just launched an 8-title deal with Comixology, who will be using Substack to do courses, to do the teaching that he actually was doing before he even became a comics writer.
Right.
Clearly, there are different modes of using a Substack. There's different types. Like, honestly, Hickman's probably going to be releasing like maps and like encyclopedias of his universe. And some people really will dig that, because obviously his audience will probably love it. That's something he's kind of done forever. Not to this level, though. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be fascinating to see if this even works. Honestly, it feels like the dot-com bubble of the late 90s.
Or the streaming craze right now. I mean, everyone's trying to find their own avenue and their own platform. And it's interesting to see, you know, ways in which the model is changing and the format is changing. I mean, we're also seeing that on a distributor level with companies leaving Diamond. You know, this is sort of the online equivalent of that. You know, where does this lead? And it's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking, because it's just uncharted territory.
Right. I mean, what worries me is that Substack's got all this fat cash. Uh-huh. But when that cash runs out, will there still be a viable way of making money through this? Or will it just be fat paychecks for Hickman, Tynan, Zdarsky, whoever is getting those big checks now, and then it's gone? And that's kind of what I was thinking about with the dot-com, like, analogy. Sure. Just because, like, all these people had this money from investors, but it was like they were investing in stuff that just wasn't sustainable. But if it is sustainable, it could be really good for the industry, because then Marvel and DC have to up their game, pay people more, maybe give them fucking healthcare for once, to lure them away from working for yourself on a Substack format. What's not working in our next bit of news is Wizard World. Unfortunately, the convention, the many conventions going 25 years, has closed its business and sold itself off to Fan Expo, which is actually the convention that we have here in Boston. So, go Monopolies! Yeah!
I can't wait for us to have three companies. It's just going to be Disney, Amazon, Fan Expo, and Nestle. Crunchyroll.
Well, Nestle owns like everything. If you look ever Google like cool guides, Nestle owns like diapers, chocolate, cars. It's insane.
Holy cow.
This isn't surprising news, in part because the pandemic has likely kept a lot of conventions afloat year to year, rather than having like stores of money in a bank account somewhere to protect them. It is unfortunate, though. There's a lot of history with Wizard World, and I'm sure it's kind of the end of something, because I'm sure the name won't continue. I mean, it might maybe in one of the locations, but
it'd be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, that was a convention that was in Chicago, Philly, New Orleans, Portland, and St. Louis.
Right.
Moving on to happy news.
Yeah.
Image Comics reveals Kingspawn number one sells record-setting 497,000 pre-orders.
Jeez.
And they sent this press release to AIPT with some very boisterous language about how Marvel has never done this in 25 years, nor has DC in 20 years, throwing out the big numbers, saying, eat it, Marvel. We are indie, and indie is in, and everybody wants Spawn. And
Everybody still wants Spawn. Not even throwing shade. It's just, it's so wild to me. Every time we get, I mean, Spawn continues to be a huge seller. And every time we get Spawn news, I'm just always like, damn, okay, like hanging in there. Like, I genuinely, I respect the hustle that Spawn has been. Spawn has continued to be huge through its entire run.
Yeah.
And that is carrying over to these spinoff series. I think that's so cool. Like it does also surprise me every time somehow.
A few weeks ago we learned Spawn Universe, the universe starting first issue, sold over 200,000 copies, which was a huge success at the time.
Yeah. Today we learned King beats Universe.
The skeptic in me is like, are these numbers real? Could they be fake? You know what I mean?
I don't think they're fake, but I think that we're seeing...
It would be a crime if they were.
We're definitely seeing, like, some speculative market stuff, right? Like, we're...
Gotta be.
Because it's... I mean, people are thinking about, oh, God, the last time Spawn started, we missed the boat. You know what I mean? Like...
sure, yeah.
I don't know. It's... But still, even that doesn't really account for all of it. I think maybe people are just excited to see something new with the character. And also, the cover art is so sick. I mean, we've talked... How often do we end up spotlighting Spawn cover art on the show?
King Spawn number one is written by Sean Lewis and Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the critic response is.
Yeah, for sure.
In our next bit of news, DC Comics released their full solicitations for November 2021. These solicitations, we've got two new Robin books, one called Robins, one called Robin and Batman. Yes, that's right, Robin and Batman. The Robin comes first in this one.
That's right.
So the latter, Robin and Batman, is by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. And it's a three-issue
series.
It's going to be beautiful. And Robins is particularly interesting because it is that comic that won that bracket challenge thing that DC Comics ran
for
3 months.
Yeah.
That's by
the
Tim
Round
Seeley
Robin. Yeah.
Valdemar Robbins. Who would have thunk Robbins won the Round Robin?
But it really did feel like we talked about this when it happened. It felt weighted. You know what I mean? Like it felt almost rigged.
It was the easy
pick. In the way that it would be like, oh, well, here's a story about, here's our Kyle Rayner series, and it's up against another Batman book. Like, of course, people are going to vote for Batman, or, you know.
Here's a Creeper book. It's Creeper's child's origin.
So strange. Like,
wasn't there like two Creeper books? I think there was.
Maybe. I just feel like there were so many cool stories that didn't get a fair shake in that Round Robin contest. You know, making people compete to get work. I'm a little salty about it, but I was telling you right before we started recording that I was laughing while I looked at the solicits, and it's because there's some great looking stuff in here, but it's all Batman. It's almost all fucking Batman. It's, you know, one Dark Knight. The next page is Batman the Imposter, which DC says is a bold, gritty take on Gotham. We've never...
Can you imagine? Never heard of that.
Then there's Batman, Fear State. Then there's Arkham City. And then the next page is Harley Quinn and I Am Batman and Batman Urban Legends. Like, it is... Look, Batman sells. It's awesome. I love Batman. I would be lying if I said I didn't. But it was truly, like... I've never really thought about the monopoly that the Batman family has in DC Comics lineup until I was like scrolling through these solicits. And it was, you know, I think until page 18 that we get Dark Knights of Steel, which is still kind of a Batman book.
I mean, he's on the cover, right?
Heavily a Batman book. Yeah. It's truly wild. I don't mean to be a naysayer.
You know, one could argue DC's had a lot of shakeups with their editorial and their and who owns it. And AT&T, I think they sold it to Discovery. Or I don't even know if that deal is done yet. But AT&T was clearly not happy with their investment. Mm-hmm. So decisions have been made months ago that we're going to be getting in November that involve a flying rat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the long and the short of it. But yeah, no. It's hard to get excited when it's so samey, and that's not to say the stories are going to be samey, but
right.
it's hard to get excited when there's not like, oh, and I want this green bulb and I want that red bulb and this, and it's, they're all black.
Sure. But there's some really cool stuff coming up. I mean, you know, you mentioned Robin and Batman.
Yeah.
Dark Knights of Steel is Tom Taylor and who's on that? It's Tom Taylor and Yasmin Putri are doing a medieval Justice League book, which looks great.
Yeah, I saw Taylor, or was it Donny Cates? Someone brought it up that 2 years ago, Tom Taylor was telling him his idea, and at the time, Cates was telling him his Thor idea. Like, it's pretty amazing to know that we were talking to creators on this show, and like they have a book that's like 4 years in development.
Percolating.
Yeah.
Also really, really cool to see the Batman Superman Authority special, which ties into Morrison's Authority, but the cover art features a very Christopher Reeve looking Superman.
I noticed that too. Yeah. That's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. There's some really exciting stuff coming up.
There's some cool collections too. Like if you've been trade waiting for Rorschach, you can read the whole thing in November. There's also Strange Adventures collected here.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's Tis the Season to be Freezin', the the new DC winter special, which I always look forward to these. And Gotham City Villains Anniversary, which has a wild creative team on it.
Yeah, I never thought Danny DeVito would ever go return to Gotham, but he is.
He should, yeah, and I'm glad he's here. And he's writing a Penguin story with Dan
Mora.
Yes,
that's really wild. Exciting.
Wonder Woman Evolution looks great, too.
Yes, Stephanie Phillips announced it. I think Newsarama had the scoop with Mike Hawthorne on art, which will be dazzling, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Marvel was a little quiet this week, but they had some news. They revealed Darkhold is getting two more one-shots, one focused on Wasp by Jordi Belair and Claire Rowe, and one on Black Bolt by Mark Russell and David Cutler. This, honestly, this was all sprouting from Steve Orlando's one-shot with Cian Tormi, and the idea of like, oh, there's this evil book and Scarlet Witch and Dr. Doom are involved, yada, 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 and stuff, bad stuff happens. It's like, okay, that's like, I'll read that. But that now, but the more they keep adding to this, I'm like, holy shit, I need to read every single one of these.
Yes, some artwork came out today from the Blade one shot, and he's got like these long, like 6 foot long fangs. Like they're insane looking. The Black Bolt looks like a cross between Black Bolt and Penance. Like, there's some weird
art
designs going on with this.
Wasp has got, like, mandibles coming out of her mouth.
Oh,
she's
my
like
God.
Puking.
Yeah, Wasp is like a David Cronenberg creation. Like,
yeah.
It's truly upsetting.
Yeah, it's super fun. These are all one-shots, too, so you can probably dabble in each one, and there's no, like, high risk that you're buying into something huge.
Oh, and as a kid who was reading Midnight Suns in the 90s, like at way too early of an age to be reading them, like I'm very excited to see what they do with the Darkhold in general here.
Also in the news, Teenie Howard is ending her Marvel exclusive run and will be writing DC Comics in November.
Wow.
This was announced by Newsarama on Friday. Mm-hmm. So a bit surprising in part because Howard has been so tightly wound with the X office, doing a lot of X books like Excalibur, X Corp. I think they were co-writer on Ten of Swords even as well.
Mm-hmm.
So feels like there might be a shift in the X office with Jonathan Hickman and Teenie Howard kind of announcing new things outside of the X office this week.
Sure. And Howard will be working on the on Hickman's Substack work as well.
Yep, times are a-changing.
Seems that way.
Speaking of changing, in our next segment,
Nathan
and I are going to change our wardrobes.
Change ourselves.
And talk about our top books of the week. We're going to talk about our top two favoritest books out this week. Nathan, what do you got for number two?
My second favorite book this week was The Silver Coin, number 5, by Michael Walsh, Gavin Fullerton, Tony Murray Griffin. And we finally get the origin story of the Silver Coin. This anthology series has followed a group, a series of unfortunate people who find the titular's silver coin and is cursed and causes terrible things to happen, or for them to do terrible things. And we flash back to the witch trials and see a town, you know, turn on one of their own, which naturally leads to a coin being cursed and a whole lot of upsetting, weird body horror. There's stuff in here that feels like it's something right out of like The Witch, and especially, you know, concerning a particular ram with boils all over its face. There's some weird imagery in this book. And it culminates in a really scary sequence in the woods with all manner of creepy crawly ghosts. And an appearance by Walsh himself, kind of letting the audience know that the story's not over.
Oh, that really was good at the end.
Yeah, I'm really excited, because this was originally a miniseries, and it has become an ongoing. So the way this ends, I'm fascinated to figure out, because this is very much a nice bookend to the series. I'm wondering how it's going to continue. But yeah, this is just super moody. Each issue stands alone very nicely, but reading them all together kind of has this very interesting cumulative effect where, like, there's imagery from the second issue that completely baffled me. Mm. And now that I've seen this issue, I'm like, oh, that's why that was there. You know, it's a really interesting approach to an anthology series.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised, even like, oh my God, they're giving us the answer of where this coin came from.
Sure. And it's also just wild that this jumps back in time after the previous issue was in the far future. So there's a little something for everybody in this book.
I literally said that, I think, in my intro to the review. I wrote the review for this on AMPT. It was like, talk about whiplash. We go from cyberpunk super future to Pilgrim times, yeah. Your way is better, Crucible. Pilgrim times. That's a new haunted house I'm working on, workshopping.
Oh,
right now.
I like that. Yeah.
My second favorite book of the week was Mighty Morphin, number 10 by Ryan Parrott and Dan Mora. We'll get into it later with Parrott, but he actually talks a lot about the amazing opening Dan Mora draws showing this alien world. It's something I talked about a lot in the review because, good Lord, it just transported me to this crazy fantasy sci-fi thing that I want to see on the big screen, you know? It is like Lord of the Rings meets... Didn't you say that to me? It's like Lord of the Rings meets Star Wars
in a way.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And when you said that to me, I was like, damn, I wish I could have stole that and put it in my review.
Well, it's full of big fantasy ideas and wild cosmic battles. And it's this giant struggle of good and evil set against the backdrop of history that Power Rangers fans have always wanted to have filled in.
And it earns the ending. Like, it could have easily had the villain that is revealed kind of just pop up out of nowhere. But... you know, it's not skimming to get to the end at all. And, you know, it's interesting to see the human character before they become the supervillain that, you know, has typically been underwritten. But with all this new backstory, now no longer is that the case.
And it colors in a character that we've kind of seen in the background of Mighty Morphin as well. You know, we get to learn a little bit more about the Altarians in a way that I didn't expect.
Right, exactly. And Mora is so good. Oh my God, the art is insane.
Yeah.
Like, there's these fight scenes where these characters are wearing really detailed armor, and I'm just like, damn, dude, how you must have lost your mind on this page.
The design for the assassin is incredible. It's it's literally like a Power Rangers villain mixed with Azrael from DC. Like, there's some very interesting choices, the way that they've kind of married the language of the show with this very different cosmic far-flung action.
Right, and these scenes are taking place thousands of years ago, so this is like highly advanced technology before humans were outside of caves, maybe.
Right.
What was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week was Batman 89, number 1 by Sam Hamm and Joe Quinones. I talked about this on the show last week, but this is a comic I've wanted since I was a kid. So, like, it fully delivered for me in every way. I start my review on aptcomics.com by saying that it was impossible for me to be fully objective, you know, because I was just, I'm so happy to see these versions of the characters living out their lives again, you know, continuing on with new adventures. And the book does some really interesting things by combining design elements from later iterations of the characters. Commissioner Gordon looks like a mix between Pat Hingle from the films and the animated series version of Gordon. Likewise, Bruce Wayne is wearing some clothes that wouldn't be out of place in Mask of the Phantasm or Batman the Animated Series. And there's some fun little Easter eggs for fans of Tim Burton, and fans of Prince will be happy with this book. And also you get to see Batman in an action sequence that would be impossible to have pulled off in 1989.
Oh, that's funny. That's true. Yeah, you're right.
And that's something we kind of get into with Ryan a little later about Power Rangers, is I just love seeing these properties that I grew up with that are able to take on a bigger than live action vibe. You know, you would never have been able to do the Altarian War in, you know, 1992 on Fox using reused footage from Go Ranger. And just like you wouldn't have been able to have this action sequence with a bat suit where he couldn't turn his head.
Yeah, there were limitations then that aren't today, but yeah, could imagine? Good Lord.
And yeah, for that alone, it's if you're a fan of that original movie, like, you got to read this book. It's so fun.
I saw someone tweet that they read the original Batman comic and then read this issue.
Oh, yeah, back to back.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Oh, and that's the wild thing is they've got people who worked on the original adaptation that came out in 1989 working on this. You know, Jerry Ordway did an exquisite variant cover, and then, oh shoot, let me find his name real quick.
Was that the one that was on the feature image for this show last week,
or yes, a different one? Yeah. Jerry Ordway did a great variant cover, which we used, which I mentioned in Judging by the Cover Junior last week. And then Steve Olaf did the colors in the new comic, and he did the colors in the Dennis O'Neill and Jerry Ordway adaptation back in 1989. I mean, there's such a love for the source material on display in every page.
So cool. Yeah, it's such a good book.
Absolutely.
It didn't make my cut, but that doesn't mean it's not a good book.
Sure. What was your favorite?
Could you imagine if you and I were like, anything that's not in the top two, trash.
Yeah, garbage.
It's garbage. Get Oscar the Grouch in here. My favorite comic of the week was Mamo No. 2 by Sass Millage. This is a Boom Studios book. I think the first issue was my favorite book of the week that week as well. This issue continues the story of a hedge witch that her grandmother used to run the show as the main witch of a small town where apparently everyone knows magic exists and fairies are real, and yet is still modern.
Dave, they do.
Oh, that's right. Shoot, damn it. I always forget that. The characters are young, of course. They're not babies by any means, but they're younger. They're middle age, right?
Sure. They're middle-aged babies.
Anyway, this issue really expands the plot of the book. So the first issue is very self-contained, where a young girl needs help with a ghost in her attic that potentially is killing her mother. And this issue starts where they've solved the ghost problem, but there's a bigger problem afoot. And it involves the hedge witch's grandmother not being buried correctly, and there are parts of her buried across the island inappropriately, and thus there are, like, spirits and, like, monsters hurting the land and the people. So these two set out to find those bits of bone and skin and save the day, basically. The art is incredible. It's the environments are so beautiful, and it's an extra long book too. It's I forget how many pages exactly. It's like 45, 46 pages an issue. So you get a lot of story, but because of those extra pages, it's allowed to have a slower pace that you just don't get in a 20-page issue, especially a fight comic. This is by no means sure. a boring comic, but there is no punching and kicking. They're battling trolls and stuff, but the trolls are as big as a as a telephone. And they're cute, but also dangerous. So there's all these like mixed right. elements that are really cool. So yeah, it's just such a unique book. I think everyone should check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Mamo. Mamo is the grandmother. That's Mamo. Her name. Moving on to our next segment. Standout.
Kapow!
Moment of the week. Fizzle, fizzle, shh.
Wow, there was a lot of fanfare for the Kapow moment this week.
Very much so. We don't have a budget for audio, so it's just us.
No.
And our voice boxes.
Yep.
This is our favorite moment of the week in comics, yep. and we read so many comics. You best know this is going to be a good moment.
Yep, you best know it.
My moment comes from Pennyworth number 1 by Scott yeah. Brian Wilson and Juan Gedeon. I reviewed this book as well, but there are two standout moments in this issue. I'm going to pick one.
Yeah.
We get to see the threat Russia, Mother Russia, is working on. And Pennyworth's like, oh, damn, I don't have powers. How am I going to stop this as a super spy man? That's the voice right. he has when I read it. I don't know. He's not from like a specific country that has an accent, right?
No. You're not familiar with Alfred Pennyworth.
Not at all. So anyway, there's this great page. You can actually go to AIPTComics.com, go to this podcast post to see it. There's this dude, I think he's naked, but you can't see below his waist. He's muscular and scary eyes, and his arms are guns.
Right.
And it's just like, I'm totally spoiling a moment in this book, but this is a spy drama that is very much in reality. There's no superheroes involved. It's Pennyworth is like in his 20s, and he's rushing around being a funny spy. Not funny, but clever. And then all of a sudden I turn the page and oh my lord, this is a supervillain he's having to fight. What a bold choice.
It looks like something out of like Resident Evil. It's an insane design. You sent this to me and I was just kind of bowled over by how bizarre it looks and it not at all what I expected from that book.
Yeah, no. It's a bold turn in a book that's very much like realistic environments and people in regular clothes. There's no costumes. That's definitely one of the craziest moments of the week for me. What do you got?
For sure, a total surprise. Mine is from Mighty Morphin number 10. Since we're so close to the interview, I guess I can go ahead and get into the ending of this issue. But it reveals the secret origin of Lord Zedd. And this, you're seeing this assassin character throughout the comic that you think is being built up to be that character. And instead it's someone else we've been following the whole time. This final page of this, you know, this character with his skin burned off and he's got a breathing apparatus on and covered in tubes that are keeping him alive. And smoke is rising up from his head, forming into a similar pattern that's on Lord Zedd's mask that we all know from the TV series and the comics. It was just this unbelievable reveal that also finally explained why he looks like that, why he's got tubes all over his body. And it's a very striking image on its own, even divorced from the plot implications. It's just this incredible image.
Yeah, isn't it gnarly? Like, it's such a cool way for him to become Muscle Man.
Right. Yeah, you always assume, like, oh, he probably started out like that, but no.
Yeah, he was born that way.
It's this traumatic moment, and the reveal is unbelievable, and the implications going forward in the series, my jaw dropped when I got to this page, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
You sound very titillated.
I am.
You didn't expect me to say titillated.
No, nothing titillates me more than Power Rangers villains.
We're going to talk about our most anticipated book out next week. Yeah. This week, I'm looking forward to a new series from Boom Studios called Eat the Rich by Sarah Gailey and Pius Back.
Hell yeah.
First of all, great Aerosmith song.
Is that an Aerosmith song?
I think so.
Oh man, that shows how little I care about Aerosmith.
Oh man, early Aerosmith's the bomb diggity. And that's the truth. I'm really excited. Oh,
you don't like Honkin' on Bobo, their blues album?
I don't know that one.
It's a real album. Look it up.
So it's about the idyllic lives of the 1%, but the horrors lying in wait underneath it all. So social class commentary, of course. The covers are cool too in that regard. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like eating the rich is something we can all get behind in this day and age.
At this point, yeah, let's do it.
Wouldn't it be funny if we just stopped the show right here? Because we leave Mike and just go eat the rich. What is your most anticipated book out next week?
My most anticipated book for next week is Superman and the Authority number 2 by Grant Morrison and Mikael Janin. I loved number 1. It did a great job of kind of setting up this alternate history and where Superman and Manchester Black find themselves. And issue 2 promises to be more of a getting the band together kind of story, which I'm a sucker for, specifically, or especially since the characters in question are, you know, the Midnighter and Apollo and Steel. I'm really looking forward to this second issue and seeing how these kind of disparate characters play off of one another.
Totally, yeah. The first issue was really good.
I loved it.
Was it both our favorites? I think
it was, so. I think last time it was our favorites of the week. And there's a lot of good stuff coming out next week. It was actually really hard for me to pick this, but I have a strong feeling that we might end up having another tie next week.
Bum bum bum. Wouldn't it be funny if like there were repercussions if we ever had ties? Like we had to like fight. Eat a bag of grapes or something. You want us to fight? Oh my god, the truth comes out today, folks.
Eat a bag of grapes.
Nathan wants to punch me in the teeth. I want to eat a bag of grapes. Moving on to Judging by the Cover, Junior.
I don't like you. I don't know if I like the person you become when you drink this much Crystal Light.
Oh, shoot. I have to win my bet and drink the whole thing in this whole show.
Was that a bet? 2 minutes left. Did we make that bet?
You had to sing me a limerick if I drank the whole thing, remember?
Oh, yeah.
You get nothing. I get the limerick. That's how it works.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks.
In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior, we talk about our favorite cover art next week, because it's not all about just the stories, fine folks. It's also about the stories, visual stories.
Oh my god. It is. We're both so tired.
No, it's not just about the words on the page. It's also the covers that sell the books. And so often, cover art is better than what's inside the book. And that may be the case in our picks this week. This week, I picked Sinister War number 3. This cover is by Jeffrey Varegi, and it's super cool. It's he's got clearly a graphic arts style that's... Mm-hmm. Is it like pop art? I think it's like pop art.
It's a little bit of pop art. It's a little bit... kind of makes me think of like a little golden book.
Oh, yeah. You're so right. Especially with the sun in the background. So, sure. Totes, check out the cover on the podcast post. You can also kind of see a little bit of it in the feature image. But we've got Spider-Man
swinging.
It's
so cute. I love it.
Yeah, his webs are like red, white, and blue, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
In the background, one of the skyscrapers has Varegi as the like almost like a sign on the roof of it.
Oh, yeah.
But the buildings, the way they're tilted is really neat. There's like in our... middle ground, we have solid buildings, but then in the background, we've got just outlines of buildings, which is really cool. And behind all that is just this big splashy yellow, which leads you to the sun in the top right corner. Spider-Man is really interesting crafted. Like, there are little details, like his hips kind of come in a little bit. There's like these red dashes in his thighs that create a sense of like muscles. It's just really different and pretty, and it looks like something you could see in a museum.
And not what you'd expect from a book called Sinister War, either, which I love. I love that juxtaposition.
Oh, my God. Do you think Varegi was told the title and he was like, I'm going to go opposite. Day.
Love it.
What was your favorite cover?
My favorite cover for next week is The Trial of Magneto number 1, the variant cover by Mark Brooks. This has such an interesting vibe to it. It's got Magneto's holding the Scarlet Witch's body, and his hand is out, and it's sort of almost a religious Renaissance kind of vibe, almost like a Virgin Mary or Jesus pose. there's something very elegant and dark and sad about it. It's hard to read Magneto's expression. Is it mourning or is it anger or is it, you know, some kind of shame? But I think this is such an interesting, it's such a striking image with a very ornate background to it. Like he's sitting on a throne holding her.
So we're going to have one of those moments where I point something out and you're going to go, damn it.
Uh-oh.
Michelangelo has a very famous statue called Pita, and it has
I knew it reminded me of something, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
Here, I'll grab it and put it in our chat here. But yeah, I think I saw it when I lived in Italy. But Jesus, she's holding Jesus, just like you said.
That is the one I was thinking of. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, this was what it. Yeah. I remember seeing this, and it was just, it's so striking, and I couldn't figure out what it was reminding me of. Thank you. This is it's an incredible approximation of it, but also makes you wonder, you know, what does this mean for the plot? Like, it seems very foreshadowing if what we know of, you know, the story of Jesus, how that plays out.
Oh, shit, you're taking it one step further. Is Scarlet Witch Jesus?
Mm-hmm. Or is Scarlet Witch dead? You know? Man, this is such a cool cover. And
God, it's Mark
doing
Brooks,
some
right?
real heavy lifting in terms of foreshadowing, I think.
Marvel, I think last year it was, because I reviewed it, they put out a Art of Mark Brooks book, special book, oversized. Totes worth buying. The dude's art style, not only is it
always
changed,
good.
I mean, he was like a traditional superhero comic artist. And then at one point he was like, let me just do covers. And he's just done that ever since. In part because the quality of these covers is like insane.
It was a very similar trajectory to like J.H. Williams III, where, you know, early on, J.H. Williams does unbelievable, you know, kind of traditional superhero stuff. And then along the way found that, you know, that watercolor style that is so unbelievably striking and has really like doubled down on it and no, but you're absolutely right. The you know, like the work Brooks has done on Black Widow, Black Widow covers has been unbelievable over the last like 6 or 7 issues. Like he's done a bunch of variants recently.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, very cool. Like just like storytelling wise, the cover is telling you something.
Absolutely.
It's funny. Our covers are like opposite. Mine's very basic and artistic in that way. And yours is like hyper deep. Like if he got one shadow wrong, your brain would go, nope, it's wrong. It's bad.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that looks like the Polar Express.
Oh my God. The eyes are dead. In our next segment, join us as we interview Ryan Parrott about Mighty Morphin number 10, the future of his exploits on Power Rangers at Boom Studios, and also we play Super Fight, Darth Vader versus Lord Zedd. Good Lord, who might win? Hope you enjoy. So Ryan, thank you so much for being on the AFT Comics podcast.
My pleasure, man. It's always a pleasure to be here.
When you were last on this show way back in November, we spoke a little bit about the world building you're doing and how Hasbro, you know, is approving stuff, and you have to get that approved, of course. But I wanted to ask, with Mighty Morphin number 10, which is out this week, it's paying off in a big way, and I feel like you've been building towards this for a while. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's funny you talk. I think when we talked in November, I probably was writing. Oh, I might have been writing the script for 10 at that point, because I was pretty, if not, I had just either I just started writing it or either I just finished it. It's like right around that time frame. But yeah, like that was, we had to get approval for 10. I mean, from the beginning of the pitch. Like, I think when we sat down, they're like, so what do you want to do with the next arc? And I was like, we're spoiling this thing. I can just say it now, right?
Sure.
We're like, I want to tell Zedd's backstory, but I don't want to do it in a way that the audience knows I'm telling Zedd's backstory. So we have to hide it behind Zordon's backstory. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason, that was sort of the pitch. Because we had talked to them about halfway through Necessary Evil. And because they were like, what do you want to do next? And I was like, I would love to do something with Eltar, because it's such a cool place in the sense of, like, it's just like Eltar, but like we've never really been there and we don't really know a lot about it, so it just felt like there was an opportunity there. And just to say it, like when the property was at Saban, when Power Rangers was run by Saban, they were very, very they were just very protective of that whole area, And they didn't really want anybody messing with that. And but when Hasbro came over, they're like, "Yeah, man." And I think possibly it's because, you know, I've been writing the book for a while, so they were like, "You burned your stripes."
Yeah, right.
Sure. So they were like, "We trust you." And so they were really open to it. So that was the first part of it was that. So yeah, when it came to getting the approvals, I think it was. And to be fair, we talked to them. We kept them apprised of basically every step, every flashback. Sure. We kind of had to like give them the, this is kind of what it tells and why it tells this and what we're doing and stuff, but they were very supportive and also very, 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 like, I don't know what the word is like, but they were just like, yeah, go for it. Give it a shot, man.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. I have nothing but great things to say about Hasbro. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like how nerve wracking is that though, to like, to tell that story, like how excited to finally tell Zed's origin story. I mean, something that's kind of been hanging over the franchise for 30 years. How exciting is that?
I mean, I put a thing up on Twitter like the day it came out just to like thanking everybody, because I was like, so when we pitched it, I was like, we're gonna do this, right? We're gonna make him an Altarian, and we're gonna say that he was his mentor, and we're gonna blow his skin off, and we're gonna all do that. And they're like, and my editor Daphne was like 100%. She's like, yes, this is it, we're doing it. And I was like, all right. Well, let's hope people don't hate me. I don't mean that in like, I'm not being flippant. I just mean in the sense of like I was 14 when I remember seeing Zed, and the idea that when I was watching that, if I could go back in time, I could sit next to my 14-year-old self and be like, hey, guess what? In like 20 years, you're going to have to actually tell this guy's story. So I'll start working on it. So like, that's just like crazy that I actually was the person who ended up telling the story about who he is. And so I was very scared because I'm like everybody else. There's franchises that I love, and when people redo people's origin stories or tell us, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you get a little
guarded and protective. And
everything doesn't have to be explained. Cause sometimes when you do explain it, you demystify it and it's not as cool.
Right.
But
right.
I thought with this one, I thought, well, you know, it's been 20 years or so.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, we can probably do something with this. And I thought, if we are going to dig into this, it could be a really cool emotional story. It could give depth to a character that doesn't have a lot of depth. And I also don't know when that character would get it. Like, I don't know what, maybe somebody will do it in a movie down the line or something like that. But I was like, when they do that, they're not going to listen to what I wrote. So who cares?
What are you talking about? Like, you're going to be writing the next movie. I thought.
Oh God. Yeah. but like, that's why I kind of felt like, I was like, we can do this. And I thought there's a really interesting emotional story here. I thought it could give layers to Zed in a way and define him in a way that he had never really had the chance on the show. So yeah, I was scared, but the really cool thing. And look, I don't go into all the areas of the internet. As wisely as I should not, as I should not, but like when I put it out there, I actually told my wife, I was like, look, I don't think I should go on the internet today. I should just I should just let the issue be. Sure. And if people don't like it, they don't like it. But like, I got online and it was just everybody on my timeline was really supportive and really liked it. And I was like, awesome. And so like, it was a very scary, but very like ultimately a very cool and sort of very, I don't know. It was just nice. It was a very nice, it was a very nice surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. I've told Dave this, I think on the show before, but like, Power Rangers was such a huge deal for me as a kid. Like, I remember watching the premiere and having this moment during the opening credits where I was like, oh, I'm different now. this is awesome. And
it changed you.
And it did. And then when Zed showed up for the first time, it was this, I mean, there was never anything like Lord Zed in a kid's show. I mean, the closest maybe like in humanoids. I mean, this was like a horror creation. And so, I loved that you've kind of played the long game with this reveal, and it makes sense to me that he's this, you know, master of evil who's also very camp and kind of has his own sense of justice. Like, I really, really enjoyed, this is just my long-winded way of saying, like, number 10 rules. Everyone go read it right now.
It kind of reminded me of, like, you know, unpacking Wolverine's origin, right? Because so much of his...
Uh-oh. Is that good or bad? I don't know.
So much of his origin was, you know, tied to not knowing what it was. And then, was it House of M, right? Where it ended with him remembering everything. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was like, oh, shit, Lord Zed, this is huge. Like, if don't mess this up, right? Because you could piss people off. So I could see why you were nervous. But I think... the way you've left it on this issue, and I'm sure you'll pick it up later, is really exciting because you've done so much work for so many issues showing us this other character we didn't know was Lord Zedd.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny you bring up Wolverine because that was exactly what I was terrified of, because I was like, when they did that and he found out that he was like a farm, I can't remember what his name was, like
Howlett,
yeah. And yeah, I was like, what are you doing, man? He's not broke. Don't fix him.
Exactly.
So like, I was like, but it's weird to be on the other side of that and being like, I'm sure there's somebody out there right now who read 10 and went, it's not broke. Don't fix it, Ryan. so like, you know, I get that. I totally get that. But this is also the thing I say is like, look, if you like the comics, that's great. If you don't like the story that I told, you have every right to remove it from your headcanon and just don't worry about it. Like, it's fine. We can still be friends. It's cool. It's just like, you know, like there's stuff that I've seen in other franchises that I was like, I don't agree with that. That didn't happen. Like, I've done that. Everybody, that's our right as a fan to be able to do that. We all have our own personal headcanons. That's fine. Sure. And that's what that's the fun part about being a fan of anything. But anyways, I was a little nervous about that whole stuff. But I think that the fun part about ultimately playing with Zedd and sort of figuring him out was like, I really enjoyed when I wrote Go-Go, I really enjoyed playing with Rita. I really enjoyed sort of figuring out how, like, it's one of those cool things about writing for a franchise that's already been done and was done in such an odd way with the way that the show was written.
Right.
Because it was like, we have this footage and we're going to try and pair it with American footage and make it work. And so you get these very weird angles and cul-de-sacs and storyline that they mention and they never pay off. And like, I think Zedd's origin story is like one line in season three. It's like Rita makes a joke. He tried to touch the Zeo crystal once and look what happened to his face. And I'm like, there's the origin. So, you know, but that's the crazy. So I was like, I knew with Rita, it was fun because the thing that I always thought was interesting about Rita was like, why she's supposed to be this terrifying, evil sorceress, right?
Yeah.
She has these four dumb morons that she's always around and trusting to do things. It's like, why? So I got to make the story was about, oh, okay, she's a little bit of a mother to these people. They're morons, but they're her morons. But then when Zedd comes in, Zedd still uses them. So I was like, well, wait, Zedd doesn't have the same sort of affection for them. So why? And so I had to sort of redefine who Zedd was in my head, which was that I made him more of a sort of like old royalty in the sense of where this guy who had like, it's like he only looks at the people around him as tools for which he can use towards his goals. And if you don't do a good job with him, you're no use to him. But he will give you tough love to try to make you better. And so I thought, okay, when I started writing that, then I started realizing, well, how do you get a guy there? What kind of person would be that? And so I started backtracking into this idea of like, okay, maybe he was more of a general. Maybe this is a guy who had been in charge and was strong and powerful, but had been sort of handcuffed by sort of the morality of politics and the idea of like, there's a line in the second episode. I'm kind of rambling. I apologize.
That's fine.
In the second issue, there's a line where Zafram's standing in front of the elders of Eltar. And he's like, we need to expand. We need to protect other people. We need to do this. And they're like, that's not really what we do. And he's like, no, if we don't protect these people, they'll either get killed or be turned into enemies against us. They'll be used against us. So if for every person we let go, we could be fighting them tomorrow. So let's do something about that. And the guy, what I loved is that the elder basically says, okay, we trust you. But in doing this, let's make sure that we don't become a monster in trying. And that was my first moment of like, this is where you're going to, this, you know, the path to hell is laid with good intentions. Like that's exactly what Zafram was going to do, was like, he was going to try. And because he tried to expand and protect other people, it created the problem that ultimately sort of made him realize that like political systems are problems and power should be entirely contained to one person because it makes it easier. You know, so like that was all that stuff, obviously stuff going on.
Right. And all of that builds up and it ends up making the latest issue feel earned because he fucking freaks out at the end there when they're like not doing anything. And you built up to that in previous issues. Something that makes your Power Rangers, and it really is yours because there's no other writers writing it, different
right now,
than like Wolverine or you know, Spider-Man or whatever, is that there aren't other writers dabbling and there's not a chance of another writer jumping in and necessarily, you know, retconning everything you do next year.
We'll see.
It just feels so permanent because you've been on it for so long, which is so exciting in comics, especially serialized stories like this. So I want to ask, how much has that you've done before, how far out have you plotted ahead? And will you never quit this book, please?
When it started, I plotted out a lot. Like when I started, it was weird. Cause when I first started working on Go-Go, like that one was very simple. Cause it was just a conversation with Daphne. And she was like, well, like, I want to do an early pro Power Ranger book. Like, what do you want to do? Like, what story do you want to tell? And we didn't talk about plot for a while. We just talked about what it was like going to high school and trying to figure this out. And so it turned into a story about when I went to high school and how when I went to high school, it split like my neighborhood, half our neighborhood went to one high school and half went to the other. And yeah, a bunch of friends that were like really strong friends of mine, like one of them went to Green Valley and the rest of them went to Silverado, and we kept hanging out, but like we just slowly drifted apart. And that was the Matt and the Power Ranger story. I just made it that the high school was becoming Power Rangers, and it was just an idea that I like the idea of forgotten friends. I like that as the ideas of that, those key moments in high school where people are like your best friend one moment, and then you never talk to them again because you don't have a class with them anymore. You know what I mean? Or they don't have the same lunch as you anymore. And so you're like, you don't see them anymore. But those are real problems and are really big moments in like high school life. So that's where that started. It was just about emotionally figuring that out. And weirdly enough, every like if I look at them as seasons in my head, like Go-Go was like season one, and then when I took over Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, that was like season two for me, and that became kind of like going to college, because it was about the three Rangers leaving, like it was Jason, Shereen, and Zach leaving to go and be in Safe Haven. So like it was like you leave to go to college, and your friends are still back home, and then when you come back, you feel like you've changed. Like that was what that season was about. So and then what this new run has been with Mighty Morphin and Power Rangers, it's been a little bit for me. It's about when you get out of college and you don't really know where you're like all the, like up to that point, like the Omega Rangers had like somebody telling them what to do. Like the Blue Emissaries there to tell them, go here, go save this, go do that.
Right.
Now that person's gone and they're like out in the world and they're trying to figure out what to do. They're trying to figure out what the problem is. And then when they go home and see their dad, who's Zordon, and they're like, hey, we got a problem. He's like, you're just kids, sit down. I know you took sociology 101 in college and you think you know stuff now. But like I just keep trying to like make it about my life.
Yeah, sure. No, it's very much that like, well, I've got a diploma, what do I do with it?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's this, and it's really cool, but it's also this amazing moment when you realize how small you are in the world.
Sure. Yeah.
I think when college and high school, it feels your world's so small because it's like it's all about you, right? It's figuring out what do you want to do in your life? What are you going to do? When you go to your classes, they tell you, like literally they have speeches at the end of this thing about how you're going to change the world.
Yeah. It's all life or death, and it's up to you.
Exactly. And then you walk out of there and you're like, no one cares if I do anything ever again.
What a relief that is.
But like, so that's, I just keep trying to apply real life stuff to the Power Rangers and just use monsters and you know, warlords and stuff as sort of metaphors for the problems we all face. So to answer your question, long way of winding, was like I can keep writing this book. It's just, I think it's just about keep looking at it at stages in your life and then and then apply it to that. So I have ideas for what I kind of would like to keep doing if I keep going. But I also feel like I've gotten to a point here where I've been doing this for 4 or 5 years now. And so there's a point where I do think it's time to probably eventually let someone else come in and tell their story and let them put their own bricks in there. And I feel like I've been very sort of, I've been monopolizing Power Rangers for a while now.
Well, like on the opposite end of things with the, you know, you're playing with realistic fears and expectations, but the series also is like full of some of the most insane cosmic visuals that like we've ever seen in Power Rangers. And I think the latest issue, Mighty Morphin number 10, I think kicks things up a notch. Like, was there a particular sequence like where Dan Mora just blew you away when you were just surprised with how something was kind of brought to the page?
I mean, well, there's like an obvious page.
Yeah, sure.
But shorter answer to that is like, I really loved like the first three pages he did. Yeah. Which was just showing so Eldar.
Good. Yeah. So because amazing.
Yeah, because it was I didn't give him a lot of direction. We talked about it, but what I loved was I loved that there was so many layers to it. Like I love that if you look at those panels, it's like it's obviously a high advanced society, but there's a lot of nature involved.
Yeah.
And then there's a one shot, I think it's page two or three, maybe page two, when the three guardians are walking out of the main building and it's the shots through the street and you see like a purple horse walking by.
Yeah.
And then there's like but what's crazy is like, it's not like what I love that he didn't do was he didn't do the everybody wears, everything is one style, everybody wears one thing, everybody's got the same haircut. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that same thing you see in a lot of, you know, world building stuff, but it's like, okay, this is society, everybody's wearing this. What I loved in that shot, there's this one person on the right side who's like listening to earbuds and is wearing like a weird parka. And I'm like, who's that guy? Yeah. And he's like, what I loved about it was it felt like a real world. It felt like Dan had thought it all through but I love world building like that. I love when you can just hint at something and you're just like, and it feels thought out. And so like that blew me away because I felt like I'd never seen anything like Eltar before. And that's the nice thing about comics, man. You can do that and you don't have to build all the costumes and do all the stuff. Dan can just make me look like a genius. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a lot of the flashbacks on the show were, you know, like either footage from the Japanese series or like these kind of black box kind of sets. Yeah. You know, because they were working with what they had. And like, so it's really cool to see after all this time, just such an expansive vision of, you know, stuff we've just kind of had in our brains for the longest time.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was just say Power Rangers is medium of comics is really great for Power Rangers. Yes, like just true, because
The scope is so big.
Yeah. You have the scope and it's all suggest. Like you said, the show didn't have the budget to do it. So they had to suggest it when they could or use appropriated footage when they could. But like, I think what's great with the comics is that you literally don't have any of those limitations. Like we can take the designs and the elements that you saw in the show. Like we did that with I don't know if they're called the Bandorians, but the ones that sort of are in the Bandor's palace and protecting them. It was like, you saw that in the show, they were just like purple hoods and they have like a wood stick. And then I was let's make them look interesting. And so, you could just do a lot of that stuff and it feels completely perfect for the medium.
You're telling me you don't have the desire to put every scene in a quarry?
I'm not gonna lie. There is a quarry joke in the next issue that I literally got the artwork.
That's awesome.
I make it Rocky. They go. I'm gonna spoil it, but I don't care. They go. They get teleported to the spot, and they go. And Rocky goes, "Quarry. Why is it always a quarry?"
That's amazing. Yeah. It's so true, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Dan Mora's art is like. I almost like when I reviewed the last Mighty Morphin issue and I was thinking like, Jesus, this is like Jim Henson did it or something. Like that level, like Dark Crystal style, like amazing like scope of work. But you know, you're playing with scenes in the now, you're playing with scenes thousands of years ago. Is there any desire to jump into the far future?
Maybe. I don't know. I definitely like the idea of trying to sort of like bring in the other shows whenever possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the show's done so much of the future that like if I did something original, I'd have to go way far in the future, you know.
Right.
I think that's the harder part of doing it, you know, is sort of going too far is that it's sort of at some point it stops being Mighty Morphin and starts turning into something else, which isn't a bad thing. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Sure. I've already started to do that a little bit when I can. It's complicated because I don't know those shows as well as I probably should. I don't feel really confident in I know the shows, I've seen them, but like I know Mighty Morphin, like I know those characters, and that's it's a little different. it's a little different. Like when I'd have to go back and watch those seasons a lot to really do that, and then find that passionate story that you really want to tell. That doesn't mean you won't see characters from those shows pop back in, and I have pitched that many times. And there's stuff, the crazy stuff that I've wanted to do from other things. I can't go into that, but anyways. But there's that stuff. Like there's a lot of it. There's a lot. I think sometimes I'm always just sort of pushing at the boundaries a little bit and going, well, if there's a spot that I think I have a story that I want to tell and I feel like it falls in pretty organically with where we're going, there's nothing that's really off limits.
And like Dave was saying, like you do flashbacks, flash forwards. Like, do you enjoy like kind of playing with people's perceptions of like how it kind of plays with what you know about these established characters leading you in certain directions and then kind of, you know, pulling the curtain back a little bit? How
manipulation of readers.
Thank you. absolutely. I was trying to think of a way to say it that wasn't quite like that, but yeah.
I've always liked playing with time a little bit. If anything, I wish I did it more in the book. Like Memento is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah,
I love the movie. And I remember I've been rewatching all of Quentin Tarantino's movies recently just for no reason whatsoever. And he plays with, I don't think I ever realized how much he plays with time. I mean, that's his thing. Yeah. He just plays with nonlinear storytelling all the time. So I like that. And I've always really liked I did it in Go-Go with like the little flashbacks or the little sort of like interstitials in the beginnings of all. But one, because it was such an interesting way. It was always like a really fun way to sort of start the book off, and you could do mm-hmm. stuff and where like it plant things. And then you could just be like, all right, well, that was fun to see that for that reason. And then have it pay off later. Sure. And that stuff I always felt like it was nice to help use those as ways to sort of define the idea and the theme of each issue. Yeah. So I really like that. I think they work really well. And I mean, Breaking Bad did it all the time. So I'm ripping off Breaking Bad left and right. sure. But yeah, so I like all that stuff. I do think it would be really fun to now that I've sort of used it a lot and it's become sort of a standard thing in my books, probably now would be the time to try to subvert it in some way that would be interesting. So if it's flash forwards or if it's alternate realities or if it's, what else could you do with it? Not a flashback, but you think it's a flashback. Like that could be kind of fun, like stuff like that. So like, I do think there's a point where I'm going to have to start, you know, challenging myself to, to not just do the formula that I've been doing every other issue.
You'll have to have one of those big, you know, boards on, with the red string trying to figure
out. Oh yeah. I'm Charlie Day. Just yeah, like,
yeah. You know the truth.
Yeah.
Something that was interesting to me with Mighty Morphin number 10 was that you never say Lord Zed, do you? That's bold. That's a bold move, Ryan. Is he not a lord yet? Do we find out how he becomes one? What's going on here?
Well, I mean, part of it was the name. I feel like you'd know who it was pretty. I mean, it's possible maybe people would like, who's the red guy at the end? But
sure, yeah.
But I felt like people would know. I mean, but the way that I looked at it was the name has, there's two ways to look at it. One is that I was like, the name is important. Like, it just, I'm not just going to have him, it's not going to be a throwaway. At one point it was. And then I was like, my Redditor was like, you can't do that. And I was like, okay, thank you. It happens. You go down the wrong path and someone told you that. Yeah. But I thought, okay, we can still lead to that. But also, the thing that I liked is, now that you've seen 10, going forward, you know, I still like using flashbacks. So it's possible that the flashbacks going forward won't be Zordon centered. They'll be more Zed centered. So maybe we'll see pieces of how we went from the guy in the back of the spaceship who's smoking and that has no skin. How do we go from that guy to the most terrifying warlord in the galaxy? Like, how did he become the character that he is? And so there were some ideas I had, and I don't think I'm going to tell the whole story because I don't think that would, I think that would be a mistake because it's a rich character and I don't want to be like, and here's the four beats that did it. And that's where he got his name and he's done. Like what I think would be really cool is
tight little bow.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wow, this guy's, you know, but like, I like, if I ever had the chance doing like an anti Obi-Wan Kenobi story where you're following like a disfigured Zed traveling the galaxy, becoming, learning stuff and becoming this badass would be such a cool story to tell.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So like, but I want to leave that open in case somebody else does that, or we get an opportunity down the line and there's a flashback story that would be cool to tell or whatever. So like, I like leaving some areas open for to be explained, but I will like hint and show like, okay, here's a piece and here's a piece and here's a piece. Cause I think it'd be cool to see sort of those moments.
Yeah, leaving it open, I think, is so important with ending a story so that it's never really truly over, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you tie it up too, that's all. If it gets a little too pat, it'll feel our
and here are Lord Zed's children.
Oh God.
Zod, Zid, Zad.
Zid.
Lord Zid.
Prince Zid.
There was a D on that, not a T.
Oh, is it? Okay. All right. Like residuals.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. The Z thing has been such a huge problem when we talk about it. Like, we're just like,
really?
So Zardus, Zordon, and Zafram all go to the place and they talk to Zelia. And Zelia is talking to, like, oh my God. Like, someone's like, I remember one time my wife was like, what are you talking about in the other room? Do you have any other letters? Are you filming a Zima commercial? Like, it's just like.
Oh, man. That's awesome. You need a Zima joke now.
I do. Yeah, I'll get there. It's gonna be like four people are gonna get that. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Rangers villain to write?
It's not like the answer that you're gonna. Oh, if I'm going to be a conceited jerk, I really liked writing Dane. I thought Dane was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like creating Dane. Like I thought that was a fun, like I liked how snarky he was with Zed. Like he was the only one who was like, everybody else is terrified of Zed. And he's just like put his feet up on the desk and being like, whatever, bro. Sure. Like I thought that guy was cool. I'd love to bring him back and do that score. Rita, actually, no, I'll tell you this. My favorite character to write, my favorite villain is Squat. I like Squat.
Yeah,
because I don't think he's evil. I think he was raised to. I think he's a person with a good heart who is trying to be evil to impress his mother. That is Squat to me. I think given the opportunity, Squat would 100% like be Alpha 5. Like he would just like he would do that. And so like those characters. It's funny. I went for a walk with my wife today when we were talking about Power Ranger stuff because that's what I make her do when we go for walks. And we were talking about it, and I was like,
I also do that with my girlfriend, and I don't write Power Rangers. So
that's funny.
But we were going, and I said, you know, I was thinking about how, like, writing the characters. I was like, you know, like a lot of the Rangers are pretty standard. Like if you go read the Wikipedia entries on all the Power Rangers, it's very like they're very honest and forthwith, and they all are kind of described the same way.
Sure.
But then I was realizing, like, when you're a kid, you're like Bulk and Skull. And the Minions are kind of I'm gonna piss people off. They're kind of dumb characters, right? They're like over the top and ridiculous. Sure. But then as a writer, I realize now, thank God for those characters. Like they are so helpful.
Yeah,
like because they have such strong personalities that you can put them in situations and they give you they're always interesting and surprising. And like the Minions are such a fun, like if it was just Lord Zed wandering around with like three other cool bad guys, like that'd be boring and terrible. But like the idea of having him like yell at Babu and Squat and Babu and Squat being like, I don't know. Like there was a panel that I really love that I wrote in, I think it's Mighty Morphin 10 Mighty Morphin 9 when they try to bring food to Zellia. And he's like, and Squat's like, can you please eat this? And she's like, I'm not eating. He's like, please, Zed gets really mad at us. I promise you, none of this is poison, right? Right, Babu? And he's like, don't drink the Jell-O. And he's like, everything but the Jell-O is not poison. And that was like a really fun moment that I was like, I wouldn't have got this if they hadn't put these characters in. So like, I've realized that those are writing fun and stupid characters is sometimes it's more fun than writing like really smart characters.
Yeah, there's an innocence to them in a weird. Yeah. I mean, they're villains, but they're also there's like a sweetness there.
Yeah, they remind you that it's a kid show, but not in a bad way, just in a like heightened reality kind of way.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of kid stuff, the Power Rangers and Turtles figures are so crazy cool. Like this, just seeing those like come out of the comic, like make your imagination go wild for like other mashups that you could do.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I pitched them. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't want to. The one thing I had pitched them, and they were like, "We can't just keep doing them, Ryan. This is like takes a while." And I was like, "All right."
Yeah.
When they told me, like, I didn't find out until I think 4 days before we did the pod, They called. So they called. They emailed me like, "Hey, we'd love you to be on Hasbro Fan First Friday." For the Ninja Turtle figures. And I was like, what Ninja Turtle figures? And because I'd heard that they might, people had been like, I guess that something had leaked and like there was possibilities, but no one had. So we did a rehearsal. And the way that I saw them was if you saw the actual Fan for Friday with the videos, like Loretta, who is the designer who had the toys, she would like slowly lift them into frame. And so I, in the rehearsal, I'm just like this. I'm just like, Exactly.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so I wouldn't see them until they came up into the frame. And so she would like bring it up and you just hear me go,
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
it funny. Was awesome.
It's like a magic trick.
Oh man, I lost my mind. I was like, can you turn it so I can see the, thing? And they're like, you can't do this on the day of. I'm like, that's okay. I'll be good on the day of. But yeah, like, it's just like, man. I think they're so cool. I think they did a phenomenal job. And
please tell me they're going to send you like the whole line.
I did beg, and they are sending me the whole.
Very nice. Awesome. Very nice.
My wife is like, "Where are they going in the garage?" And I'm like, "They're going on that shelf right there."
Right. Yeah.
You should get comps. You could sign them, and then maybe make some cash off that too.
Hey, what I've noticed is like the hype around the figures has brought more attention to the comic too. Like there were some folks I saw who didn't know about it.
A lot of them didn't know about it. Everybody was really. Everybody kept going like, "Why'd they do that?" And I'm like, and then you see like eight people in the timeline being like. because of the comic, man.
It's like, canon, bro.
Yeah. I will say this. This is the only thing I'll spoil. Not a spoil, but there's a buddy of mine who writes for a franchise, and we've had a conversation about, like, we should do that. And he's like, yeah, that'd be cool. And but, like, I haven't actually told my editor yet. Like, I keep telling him, like, I'm like, oh, we'll get to it. But I'm just too busy, and I can't write it. So I'm like, we'll see. I don't know. There's something that'd be – it's not exactly the kind of crossover you would imagine, but –
That's exciting.
Ooh, yeah, it was pretty cool. But there was some stuff that we've talked about, which would be
fun.
I'm
into that. Okay.
Yeah. Ryan, if you've been on the internet this week, as you've already proven you have been, you've heard of a thing called Substack, and we wanted to ask you about it. What do you think of this exciting news, maybe not exciting news, that's going on right now with the platform?
Oh, man. Am I about to step into like a whole, like a hornet's nest and get attacked and stuff? This would be awesome.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think. I don't know. What do you think, Nathan?
Actually, I'm curious. Like, so here's the thing. I didn't even know what Substack was until about 4 days ago.
Me either.
I'm intrigued by it. I know what it is now. And I was like, oh, I love the concept of it in the sense that, I think I'm not a huge social media fan. I think it's a very scary place sometimes, and people can be very. I'm very sensitive, and people can be very mean, and and there's just things like it's not a great place for discourse. It's not a great place for. It's a great place to learn information and keep updated on cool things. It's not a great place for conversation and debate. I don't think no one's ever won a Twitter argument. But thing is, so like I'm always looking for new ways to engage with fans because I do love that. I have had a really great interactions and the Power Ranger fans have been really cool and I like doing that. So for me, like the idea of Substack where people can create like a newsletter and that newsletter can be sort of a way to directly interact with your fan base and give them material in a way that, is sort of like it feels like we really moved as a society interesting over the last 2 or 3 years, maybe the pandemic's because of it, maybe not. This idea that now everything's sort of streamlined, right? It's this idea of like the you and the your patrons, no pun intended, are like now it's like how much of the middleman can we cut out and how can we get it just about content and you're paying exactly for content? And I think that's really cool. I do think when you bring in like some of the big names from the big companies coming in, I know that's a scary, dangerous thing for other people who are already taken that space and want to use that space and they feel like that's their avenue. So that can be very scary because it's like, well, now that they're here, no one's gonna come look at me, right? But I don't know. I feel like those guys with Hickman and Snyder and all those guys coming in there and Tynan, like it shined a light on it for me. And so now I'm looking in there and I'm finding stuff that I wouldn't normally have found. So there's a plus and minus. So I know it's probably a little scary, but I do really like the idea of. I think there's something really cool about the idea of a creator. Like if I found an artist and I had an idea for a story. And I was like, hey, let's do this together. Mm-hmm. And then I could go on Twitter and be like, hey, I have this project. It's a little out there. It's not something that would probably be published and be for a huge audience.
Yeah.
But we're gonna make this. And if you want to do it, you can be a subscriber on Substack, and you can get this. Like, it might open up the possibility of some really cool out there storytelling that you wouldn't necessarily get. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, it is. It feels very much like a new frontier kind of thing. It's very. Kind of untested, especially on this scale. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it develops for sure.
I am curious. Are there sides on this? Like you don't have to go through all of it. I can go look, but is there?
There are 92 sides, and we're going to go through all 92 right now.
But is there like a pretty strong divide in regards to like the way this is?
No, from the research I've done, what I can tell is that there are concerns based on, it's kind of similar to how you were saying, like social media has its drawbacks. I think this platform has its drawbacks as well in terms of some of the people that it knowingly engages with.
Okay. All right. That's valid.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where I also think that there are creators who are big name creators who are joining and are using their deals to make a difference. So I do think that it's one of those things that hasn't quite been proven yet. So you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think those are areas that I'm sometimes, those are areas sometimes that I'm, as I think sometimes when you are working in certain companies and stuff like that, you can be a little blind to to sort of the I think it'd be the equivalent of like working in the studio system and then not understanding the independent film market, right? In the sense of like you realize that like there's certain money and energy and ways things are done that you don't have to deal with when you work in like the big Paramount world. And I feel like that sometimes I'm blind to, you know, like I can see how you're like, oh wow, yeah, that's I can see how you're counting on that being an area for you to be able to prosper in and your fan base and the idea of somebody coming in and like grabbing it. Like I'm not saying it's the exact same thing, but I think it was a little bit with what happened with Zach Braff and when he did the Kickstarter stuff, right? It's that same kind of feeling of like, this is for people who are trying to make it and you have made it and yet you're taking it. I can see, I understood that feeling. Now, whether or not it was right or not, but I understand the fear reaction. Of that. I get that. I totally understand that.
It still remains to be seen how people will utilize the platform. And it is funny, like it you make a really great point about having blinders, but also like you when you're in a I can't tell you how many times I've like had these conversations where like I've recorded an episode with Dave and then I'll go, you know, go to dinner with my family and say something like, yeah, so we talked about the NFTs today. And then I have to explain what those
what
are.
The NFTs for
like
are? The next
Cause it's like, or, you know, explain why it pertains to the comics industry, you know?
Yeah.
And it is interesting. Like, I think, you know, we're hitting this like singularity point where there's so much in so many avenues that it makes sense that people are still kind of catching up on everything.
Well, that's why I like coming on and talking to you guys. Cause like, this is now, no, I mean that like this is educational for me. And like,
we had Philip Kennedy Johnston on, we asked him about NFTs and he was like, what the fuck is an NFT? That's right. So Nathan and I spent like 10 minutes trying to explain this really weird thing. And he was
and
like,
he was just like, oh, like,
I'm too busy. I'm too busy
he's
for
like,
this.
That's not something I need to put in my brain, but thanks guys.
it's the competition to the NFL, man. That's
but there you go. It does sound like some sort of sporting thing.
Exactly.
But yeah, it'll be really fascinating to see what happens with it because it's not proven yet, right? From what I understand, there's just a ton of money Substack has, and they're just handing it to people, hoping it'll jumpstart something.
It'll be.
But in a year or two, who knows? It could just be nothing.
I think it kind of is part and parcel a little bit with what's going on with the Comixology of it all. Like, is that with the idea of the subscription service and this idea of like if you create enough, like if I said you could spend $10 a month for comic books and you get six of them, you're like, okay, that's a lot. But if I say you could get 100 of them and they're by these people, there's that thing where it starts to, it's just, we all have a little bit of money and energy and it's how many ways are we going to split it all up? Right.
Well, what comics are you reading right now aside from your own?
Oh man, that's the biggest problem right now is because I'm so far behind on stuff. Sure. Like I don't really ever get to read for pleasure. It's so bad. I always feel like the biggest cop out when I answer this question. Like, what are you reading? I'm like, I'm so far behind. Like, what am I reading? I just read. I've been kind of catching up. I haven't really reading new stuff. I read Jeff Lemire's. I read The Private Eye. Is that Lemire? That's right. Is that? Mm-hmm. I think that is The Private Eye.
Private Eye. Oh, is that from Panel Syndicate?
Yeah.
Yes.
I read that.
That's Brian K. Vaughan, isn't it?
Brian K. Vaughan, sorry, yeah. Or maybe it is. I can't remember. It's one of the two guys. They're both geniuses and much better than me. I read that. I thought that was really awesome. Uh-huh. I was reading Why the Last Man a little bit again, just to go back and read that again, because I was like, man, I saw the trailer and I was like, I remember that book. And I have been rereading 100 Bullets, which I love. I love 100 Bullets. I think 100 Bullets is so freaking cool.
You know, it's funny, I just interviewed Brian Azzarello and he was like, fucking spoil away. I don't give a shit. He was like, this is how you sell comics by spoiling them.
I was supposed to be on a panel with him and like at the last minute he couldn't show up and I was heartbroken because like I really love his books and and I was like just to get the chance to meet the guy. That's happened a few times where I've been like there's been like one or two people that I met and I was like holy crap and he's like top five for me because I was like oh man meeting him would be crazy because I think he's amazing. I'm really behind. What else, man? It's like what are you guys reading? Because like I'm.
Well, to do this show, almost everything.
Everything? All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weekly show, so, and we try to pick the best comics, and we try to be fair by reading almost everything. So
I gotta say, I mean, I've talked about it earlier in this episode, or I talked about it recently, but the Batman 89 rules, and I'm really looking forward to Superman 78. Like, these are, I'm so excited about these like continuation stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a similar way to Power Rangers, like, it's just really cool to like revisit these properties that I just grew up loving.
Yeah, the nostalgia element.
Yeah, for sure.
But 89 is like so specific, so it's like extra nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I really love that. I love the current Swamp Thing series. I just read Mark Russell and Mike Diodato's Not All Robots, which is super weird and dark and hilarious. Awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff coming out right
now. Too much good stuff. Honestly, like, no one can read it all unless you have a podcast and you devote yourself to this stuff.
Yeah. I was in Portland for a con, and I was having dinner with some people, and there was a guy across from me the whole time. We just talked the whole time, and we just got along with everything, and everything's cool. And then at the end of it, I was like, dude, I forgot your name. He's like, it's Rom. And I was like, oh God, geez, man. and I'm here talking about Power Rangers, like, woo. Sure. And he's just like, yeah, man, good for you. But he was the nicest guy, and he's really cool. But yeah, it was just the funniest thing. I was like, we just get along famously. And I was like, this guy's awesome. And then at the end, when he tells me his name, I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. He was really fun to talk to about his process, because his process was very different than mine. But it was like, it was cool the way he would like, because you're like, well, this is the way I do it. And he would like, well, I try like this, this, this. And I'll be like, maybe I should try that. That's a way better way to take it. That seems way more efficient. Yeah. Nice. If I will say this, my dream project, because you didn't ask, but you said that it is Batman 89. So if I could, I would do a sequel series to The Last Starfighter. That would be my.
Hell yeah.
Dude, like,
okay.
That. He leaves to go restart the Armada. Like, you know, like, come on, man. Like, let's see what it's like on. Do that, you know.
That movie is the start of a trilogy. Oh,
it's
should have
it's completely lost. It's completely it's yeah. screwed, and the rights problem is like, it's like a single web.
I was thinking it could be like an IDW book, maybe. Get Heather on that, Heather Antos.
Like, I think like 5 or 6 years ago, Nick Castle was trying to like figure out the rights to do another one, and just could not make it happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing ever, right? The director of Last Starfighter was the body double from Michael Myers in the Halloween.
Right. Yeah.
Like, what? What was that? Speaking What's of, that career trajectory? Yeah. Right.
We're recording this on Friday the 13th, and it's all going so well so far. So
that's pretty good.
Let's totally ruin it with this last segment we like to call Super Fight, because it's from this card game called Super Fight. We're going to have two characters duke it out, and they're going to duke it out in a very specific way. And you're going to tell us how or who wins and how.
Oh, God.
And I have decided that it will be Lord Zedd versus Darth Vader. So. Okay. So I just pulled this card. I'm not cheating. And I pulled the card. Who is most likely to succeed, Lord Zedd or Darth Vader? Oh, my God. Should we be more specific? High school prom king? I don't know.
High school prom? I think Zedd would totally be the high school prom king.
Absolutely.
At the very least, he'd put everybody under a mental, like a spell, and make them all vote for him.
Does he need ointment? How does his skin or muscle not dry out? Is that a thing?
I think that's what the tubes are for.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. The exoskeleton that's on him is lubricating, or has like, he must have an incredible like face regiment or something like that.
That's right.
Like,
also, can you imagine him showing up at prom with like that giant cane?
Oh man, that's just
a bow tie. Yeah, just a bow tie. Right? Yeah. Okay, who would win? I'm gonna get in trouble though. Like, Darth Vader's Darth Vader. Like, right. I don't know. Like,
he's a wizard.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I feel like Zedd's got more capabilities and stuff and throw stuff, but like Darth Vader would just grab him. I remember there was this dope like novel I read when I was a kid called Shadow of the Empire, which was
me too. In middle school, I think I read it.
And this might be it. I think one of the chapters was about Darth Vader, like, rehealing himself and, like, how he would be happy. He was using the dark side to reheal himself.
Yeah.
And what happened is it would work, and then he would get happy because it would work, and that would turn the thing,
undo
and it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And I was always like, that's the coolest thing anybody's ever come up with my character. So I don't know what that has to do. Like, so I was thinking, like, if like, there's something funny about, you know what would be funny? They would not fight. They would just sit there and they go, how do you deal with it all? Like, how do you deal with looking this way?
It
like,
becomes therapy.
Yeah, just like, we look so terrible, but we're good people inside, you know? Yeah.
It'd be like Stuart Smalley. They'd both be sitting, looking in a mirror, and they'll say, I'm good enough, I'm strong enough, and goddamn it.
I'll take my helmet off, you take off your visor, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, not that bad.
Then they just hug it out for like 15 minutes.
I love that. Yeah.
Yep.
Prom king and queen right there.
Well, Ryan Perry, thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast. You have Power Rangers number 10 out next week, August 18th. Do you have anything else you want to hype?
That's it right now. If you, if you like Mighty Morphin, we got the Altarian War coming up, which is, that might be a bit of a spoiler, but yeah, we got some big stuff coming up, after starting with, I think it's 13 or 12, 13. Yeah. Awesome. With 13, and things get pretty nuts. So a lot of fun. This is sort of, it's all been building towards this and stuff I've been wanting to do for a while now. So
it's all been building to this.
Yeah. Keep using that. Yep.
Thank you, Ryan.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you.